Welcome to Sports Community Podcast, being recorded in the heart of the beautiful Mornington Peninsula here in Victoria, Australia, in the studios of RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. Welcome to you, and I have, of course, with me Steve Pallas, who is the Managing Director of Sports Community Australia, and we're going to be talking about all the latest in the world of grassroots sports. Welcome to the podcast, Steve.
G'day, Joe. It is fantastic to be here yet again.
Fantastic. Now, we've got a bumper show for you today. We've got Mark Nash, who is the manager for Good Sports in Victoria and Tasmania. And we've also got the latest and greatest in the world of grassroots sports news. So we're going to kick that off right now with some grants and some news, starting off with the grants, Steve.
I'm going to start with the grants. Well, there's a lot of grants going on, Joe, I guess, as you'd imagine, with the start of the, I guess, summer season kicking off. So probably the last round of grants for the year. So this could be your last chance for 2014. New South Wales has got grants for country athletes to assist talented athletes to get to competitions in city regions. So little athletes in New South Wales can apply for up to $500. Jumping across to the other side of the country, the big bath, Western Australia, there's quite a significant grant pool operating at the moment by Tourism Western Australia. It's called the Regional Events Scheme, and it's put together a pool of $750,000 to encourage organisations to create regional events. So if you're a Western Australian sports club, creating a regional event, a sporting event, is certainly one fantastic way of qualifying for this grant. And there are so many different examples around Australia of clubs that have done that, that have created traditions that provide revenue for their club year on year on year on year. Just coming around the country, coming through the Great Australian Bite, we've got South Australia, and they've got same sort of thing as New South Wales, the SASSI Individual Athlete Program, that provides assistance to support athletes that are heading towards national, international Olympics and Paralympics again in support. Victoria, coming around the country, Victoria has got a major infrastructure grant open at the moment where clubs can apply for up to $50,000. Worth of funding, Joe, which is pretty cool, and that's to support the improvements to their facilities, which is one of the most common requests that we get through our doors every week. So they're just a few, Joe, of the grants that we've got on the sports community website. Go to www.sportscommunity.com.au and then click on the grants tab. Just also looking that next week in cricket clubs in Victoria, their cricket club community facilities grant also shuts towards the end of October. So not much time if you're a sports club wanting to get your grant applications in before the end of the year. But no matter where you are in the country, Joe, there seems to be grants that are open and available ready for sports clubs to apply.
Awesome. So once again, if you're out there and you're interested in grants for your clubs, just go to our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au, and you'll find all the grants there listed under our grants tab. Now, coming to some news, mate, ASADA has decided to issue its much-awaited show cause notices to the Bombers football players, but they have been amended. And I do bring this up in our news section because it does have some relation to, or does bear some relation to, our local grassroots sports clubs, because there's many clubs out there that are dealing not so much with doping, but with ice and with marijuana and with all kinds of illicit drugs in their grassroots sports play. So this is a very interesting development.
Yeah, as well as supplements, and even we're seeing or hearing from club presidents the use of supplements and vitamins and additives and those sorts of things. So it'll be really good. I'm really looking forward to, I mean, the whole sporting world is now looking forward to putting an end to the Essendon and Cronulla situations and moving on. But for us, it'll be really good because it'll allow us to then start to talk interview Kim Coventry from ASADA, we're hoping, because Kim's the education manager at ASADA, and up until very, very recently has had everyone from ASADA has had a media ban. They can't talk to anyone except for the CEO. So, but there's a lot of information and a lot of things coming out that we can learn that grassroots sports need to hear.
I was going to ask you, as an expert in the area of grassroots sport, can you see? Well, I suppose it's all dependent on the findings. But what kind of implications can you see for grassroots sports clubs out there as a result of what ASADA's doing?
Look, the first thing from my perspective is the increase in awareness. And one of the things that we're seeing internationally with drug use is that the prevalence of drug use is being pushed down the pathway chain. And particularly in America, specifically in America, where there are stories coming out now and doping infringements coming out now where kids that are just starting on the pathway journey, planning on the elite pathway journey, so 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds are being found guilty of having illicit and illegal substances in their bodies, which is coming from coaches and parents that are wanting their kids to succeed and to have the best possible opportunity, they think, to enter the pathway because it's so competitive. So I think that one of the things that will happen is a significantly increased understanding of what you can and can't do, and also really taking that, and where we're keen is to get Kim on the line and interview her and really start to address or give volunteers the information about what is suitable and what isn't suitable at their clubs, because we're not hearing, but the presidents and clubs are telling us repeatedly that there's all sorts of behaviour going on within their clubs relating to certainly supplements and vitamins, but they just don't know whether it's appropriate, legal, healthy, unhealthy, whatever. So I think that's one of the key learnings that will come out once it's all put to bed and people can start to talk about what we've learned through this experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, Joe, to cut you off. And the other thing that I'm really looking forward to exploring is the leadership side of it and what broke down within those clubs that allowed the unsatisfactory circumstances to come about. Like, so from a governance and a board and a management level, what broke down and where was the responsibility and how can we take that learning from a leadership and management and control perspective from that professional sport down to the club level? Because there are many, many clubs, huge number of clubs that are paying professional coaches and have professional staff that run the day-to-day operations that are overseen by volunteer committees. So I'm really also looking at it from, I'm really keen to look at it from that management leadership perspective as well.
Mm. And it's timely today that we've got Mark Nash, the manager of Good Sports for Victoria and Tasmania, on the show, because alcohol is often forgotten, is the forgotten drug. It is a drug. It has enormous social implications and massive implications for grassroots sports clubs who often are reliant on the revenue that alcohol gives them to support their club. And Good Sports offers a lot of alternatives and a lot of ways that clubs can deal with using alcohol responsibly at their premises. So very timely indeed.
Oh, look, I love what Good Sports do because the support that they give to the clubs and the presidents. Because imagine you're the president, you step up to the role of whatever sport that it is, and you take the role and you predominantly into the role as president thinking about the sport. But very, very quickly you end up finding that you spend little time thinking about the sport and more time thinking about the club and the people within the club. And so then very few of us have got that skill to know, that social services skill set when you've got unsatisfactory behaviour and how to deal with it, specifically when there's alcohol and drugs involved. So many, many presidents, and often that leads to unsatisfactory behaviour within the club,
yeah. And
a deteriorating of club culture, and then we all know what happens when your club culture goes to the toilet, that really, your club's on a very dangerous slippery slide to oblivion in a lot of cases. But when you've got those effects, social issues within your club, very few presidents are equipped to deal with them. So good sports gives clubs the tools and the support to be able to deal with these really complex social issues that, no one thinks about when they go into the role of volunteering for their local sports club.
And they're willing to roll up their sleeves and get in there when the club is showing signs of being on the wrong side of the pendulum when it comes to alcohol. So that's another thing for incoming presidents or people who, or clubs that are struggling to get a president or a committee on board because there are a few inherent problems. Good sports is also there at that particular point in your journey to help you turn the ship around and right the ship. So once again, really, really important resource out there, good sports. Now, mate, I just want to talk about grants for a little bit in terms of the news. In that, I speak to a lot of clubs out there and club representatives that seem to think that grants are this ethereal type thing that you can just never get your hands on, and everybody else seems to be getting them, but you don't, and debate whether they're real or not. Well, I can tell you very much. I can tell the listeners very much that they are real, and just recently $100,000 was awarded to netball tennis in an attempt to boost netball and tennis in South Bendigo at the Harry Trott Oval, and there's also been a release of a number of different grants for sports clubs that we're aware of. But the one program that I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about is what they call the Local Facilities for Local Clubs program. And Damien Drum, who was recently in Bendigo to promote the program, has put out a press release. And if you just bear with me, I'll read the first bit of it. More than 70 sport and recreation clubs across Victoria can look forward to new and improved facilities by using their own funds and resources to partner with the Victorian Coalition Government under the inaugural round of Local Facilities for Local Clubs program. Successful club programs announced today were new flood lighting for Bendigo Bowls Club with $53,750, funded 50-50 between the club and the program. So what we're talking about here, mate, is a new way that clubs can look at raising funds, and that's by stumping up some of their own funds in a partnership with the government. So I think that's pretty exciting news for clubs out there.
Well, I think there's a couple of trends that we're really seeing now with grants. One is that it's almost... Well, it's very, very challenging to get significant grant funding for a standalone club. Like, it's now got to be provide multi-purposes for multiple groups within the community. So we're seeing a lot more of football, netball, tennis, netball, I think you just said there. I'm sure the bowls club that got the lighting will be... also have in their application have had different community groups using the facilities and those sorts of things. So that's the first trend we're seeing. The second trend is as you say, stumping up or putting up or putting up their own money. And there's a couple of reasons for that, because if you look at it from the government point of view, then in the bowls club that you just mentioned, it was 50-50. Well, effectively the government gets twice the buying power. And so this is a very strong way of influencing the grant process, is that you traditionally clubs have looked at government for 100% of the funding, whether it be local, state or federal. But those clubs, the way to influence the selection process is to walk up and say, yes, here's our contribution. And it shows a number of putting your money on the table, and this is coming from the grant providers. Not our opinion. But putting the money on the table shows a number of things. It shows the commitment of the club to the program. It shows it's an indication of community support. Like, if you're going to throw $50,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 on the table, You know, that's come from the community, so it's a clear indication of community support, commitment for the project, and also, you know, a financial commitment that, that allows the government to spend, get, you know, more bang for their buck, so to speak. So why wouldn't a club, why wouldn't the government be looking? It's just illogical. You kind of be looking to fund those projects that you get the most value out of.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
If you combine having a tremendous community benefit with having putting some money on the table, that's you know, double-edged and triple-edged sword, and that's what they're... I don't know if there's no such thing as a triple-edged sword, but that's what the grant providers are now looking for, how to maximise that dollar-for-dollar value. And I was last week I had the privilege, Joe, of being... flying out of Melbourne when it was 8 degrees and landing in Brisbane when it was 28 degrees and listening to one of the guys from Queensland Department of Justice who's talking about the upcoming grant program for the community benefit program that's funded by the Casino Royalty. So that's a significant program that's coming out in the coming, or sorry, grant program coming out in the coming weeks, and he was saying exactly that same scenario that what they're looking to do is to maximise the value to the community, and we're seeing that flow through into out of the announcements from say Damien Drum, the Minister for Sport in Victoria.
Yep. Now, let me just throw a few numbers at the listeners so they're aware of the significance of this program. And this is in the words of Damien Drum. Of the 73 successful projects, I am proud to say that over $2.4 million has been collectively contributed by the community, including over $736,000 of in-kind labour and materials, along with over $1.67 million in cash contributions. This is an amazing effort by Victorian sporting clubs, and demonstrates what can be achieved when we all work together. This is $2.4 million in funding that may never have gone into local sport without the capacity of clubs to partner directly with the coalition government under this program. The result is $4.4 million worth of sports facility projects that were otherwise years away. So for clubs out there, you know, have a good look at this. It's called the Local Facilities for Local Clubs Program, LFLC.
Yeah, and I just quickly did some sums while you were talking there, Joe. That's kind of averaging out at about $35,000 per club.
Mm.
So we're talking significant funding that the government's putting on the table, but we're also talking significant amount of contribution from the clubs, which is making a tremendous difference. But it's now, you know, really, really a key part of funding applications that there is, particularly the major one, where they are contributing themselves as well.
All right, Free TV has released a media statement which shows some statistics on patterns of watching sport, and interestingly, more people are watching sport on free TV than ever before. 11.7 million Australians watch sport on commercial free-to-air television every week. Also, the audiences have been released for the top 10 sporting events on free-to-air TV, and they are as follows, Steve. Number one is the State of Origin, New South Wales, Queensland second match. Number two is the State of Origin, Queensland, New South Wales first match. Number three is the Rugby League Grand Final. Number four is the AFL Grand Final. Number five is the State of Origin, Queensland, New South Wales third match. Six, AFL Grand Final presentations. Seven, State of Origin, Queensland, New South Wales first pre-match. Eight is AFL Grand Final on the ground. Nine, Rugby League Grand Final presentation. And 10, State of Origin Rugby League, New South Wales, Queensland, second game, pre-match. Number 11 is one-day cricket, England versus Australia, game one. So that's the first time any sport outside of rugby and AFL really come into the calculation. So interestingly, there you have it, top 10.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think, off the top of my head, I think that the... The viewer figures for pay TV sport have also significantly increased. But I think it points the way to, you know, what we, I know you and I have spoken about this a lot, the next big trend in grassroots sport will potentially be live broadcasting of matches at the local level. And because there is certainly an appetite out there for grassroots sports to be seen on television and on the internet and those sorts of things. Maybe not at the commercial level, but certainly at the community level. And we're already seeing examples of that where basketball stadium in Melbourne is live streaming every single one of their games.
Yep.
And we had Andrew from Fox Sports Pulse come on just recently, and he was talking about the live streaming partnership that Fox Sports Pulse have done with YouTube, which saw a local football grand final have 10,000 people at the game, 10,000 people watching it live.
Yes.
And then 150,000 people watching it online over the subsequent 12 months. So I think that those figures will in not too distant future, we'll actually start to see live streaming figures being broadcast, as well as the commercial TV and pay TV figures being broadcast, and particularly for those sports that can't muscle in on those huge numbers of the major popular sports.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, last cab off the rank for now. New section is something that's very close to us at Sports Community and is becoming more and more important in grassroots sports. And it's very timely now with Movember and all the depression campaigns that are coming to the fore, that Australian sport really looks at the role of sport and mental illness. And there is an Australian First study which is using sport to reduce depression and suicide rates in young men, and it's being conducted by the University of Wollongong, which has teamed up with Movember, donating almost $2 million over the next 3 years to the University of Wollongong, so they can conduct the most comprehensive study of its kind in the role of sport in helping adolescent males identify and overcome mental health issues. And the project will also see the University of Wollongong partner with leading government sports bodies like the Australian Sports Commission, top organisations such as AFL, Cricket Australia, Tennis Australia, Swimming Australia, Basketball Australia, Football Federation of Australia, as well as mental health providers, the Black Dog Institute, Australian Drug Foundation's Good Sports Program. Again, timely that we have Mark Nash on the program later on. And more than 5,000 young men from across the sporting codes will be taking part in this University of Wollongong-led research. So I know you would probably echo my sentiments in being excited about this type of research, because mental health is becoming an increasingly important issue in society, and we haven't done a lot of research in the way that sports can help overcome mental health issues. So for me, this is a really, really good piece of news.
Yeah, and I'm very, very keen. This is an area that we've talked about going exploring a lot further in 2015, is because, again, it's like the discussion on alcohol and drugs in one regard, that a president, you know, responsible for the club, or the committee's responsible for the club, and then all of a sudden there's a member that's displaying, you know, unusual characteristics, often antisocial characteristics, and too often we write that person off and don't look at the cause and respond to the cause rather than the actions and the symptoms, so to speak. And this is an issue that a number of, or many club presidents have talked to me about over the journey. So it's one that I'm really keen to explore. And so to get research on the topic will be fantastic. And maybe we should consider, Joe, getting the researchers onto the show and getting them to talk more, as well as hopefully in a couple over the time, getting people like Jeff Kennett, the chairman of Beyond Blue, to also talk about mental health, particularly as it relates to sports clubs.
That would be very nice. Okay, mate, thanks very much for your input. We're going to take a short break and take some sponsors' messages, and when we come back, we'll be with Mark Nash from Good Sports Victoria Tasmania. Thanks very much. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Welcome back to Sports Community Radio here on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. As mentioned in the introductions, we've got a very special guest with us today. His name is Mark Nash. He is the manager of the Victorian Tasmanian branch of Good Sports. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me along.
No worries. Now, Mark, I just wondered if you could take a couple of minutes just to introduce us to Good Sports for the listeners out there that don't know too much about it, and also maybe just a bit of a briefing of your role at Good Sports.
Yeah, sure. Well, Good Sports is a community program of the Australian Drug Foundation, and Good Sports started back in 2000 in Victoria with a small pilot of clubs in regional Victoria who were looking at the way alcohol is positioned in the sporting club environment. So Victoria Police had identified that there was potential for sporting clubs to be a high-risk environment, particularly for young males to go along and be involved in their sport and then potentially drive home and drink driving and so forth. So from that small pilot, the program has now grown into over 6,500 clubs around the country. We're now in every state and territory, which is fantastic. And clubs progress to a three-level accreditation program. So level one is really looking at compliance. So do they have a liquor license or a permit? Do they have at least a couple of people who are trained in responsible service of alcohol? And then also complying with state and territory smoke-free legislation. When they move through to level two, it's maintaining the level one criteria, but then looking at some of the behaviours and practices at the club. We introduce a safe transport policy at level two, and then level three is looking at a comprehensive alcohol management policy. So clubs have between 3 and 5 years to move through the program, and the focus of the core program is around alcohol and tobacco and creating healthy, safe environments for clubs, so they're welcoming for young people and families. And most of the clubs that we talk to say that that's the type of environment they'd like to achieve. So
absolutely, absolutely.
I was just about to say
it's a fantastic program, and those three levels of accreditation. We'll talk about it some more, but I just wanted to say before we get into that, I was just informing the listeners that we're having a discussion just off air. Mark is currently based in Tassie, and we're just talking about the scallop pies down there as being the best things you could ever eat in the world. Now, you've agreed with me on that, haven't you?
Oh, I've absolutely agreed. The seafood is second to none down here. I'm very, very fortunate to have that on my back doorstep. But look, as far as my time with the ADF, I was Tasmanian state manager for 2.5 years, and I've recently transitioned into the Victorian Tasmanian role. So spend a couple of days in Melbourne most weeks and really enjoying meeting our key stakeholders and also our clubs and associations around Victoria.
Okay, so that's a relationship where I know that quite a few people I speak to are a little bit confused by. Good Sports is actually a program that is run out of the ADF or the Australian Drug Foundation, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So we're part of the community programs unit, so Good Sports is really one of the Australian Drug Foundation's flagship programs. And again, we're a program that's continuing to grow and now has a really strong footprint in each state and territory across Australia, which is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And we've done a lot of work with Good Sports around the country, and with people like Sharon Noski and lots of other people. And it's just an incredible program. I just want to talk about some of the programs within the program. So
sure.
you've mentioned the accreditation process and how it takes 3 to 5 years to go through, and some of the potential benefits for the clubs. What other programs do you offer?
Yeah, Good Sports is continuing to evolve. So, for example, in Queensland, we have the Good Sports Healthy Eating Program, which really looks at nutrition within sporting clubs. And we know that sporting clubs are really effective around alcohol and tobacco and creating those environments that are safe. for their members. And in Queensland, there's a healthy eating component which looks at the canteen. In Tasmania, we also address mental health awareness. So through the Good Sports Healthy Minds program, so clubs work through a number of different activities, again, at their own pace, around mental health awareness. So it could be holding a theme day, around providing some resources, and also linking club members in with local service providers. So we're really, really pleased with how the program continues to evolve. And in Victoria, we've received some additional funding through the Victorian government to roll out tackle the issue around ice, alcohol and other drugs in community sport.
Oh, that's fantastic, because that's really current at the moment. There's quite a bit of press about the ice in communities and how to tackle that from a sports club perspective. So, you know, that's great and really important for clubs. And how can they get information on these kind of programs?
Yeah, certainly. The best place is on our website, the Good Sports website, which has information around the core program. But with the work that we're doing around ice and other drugs, there's a special page which we've set up, which we're calling Tackle the Issue. And that has all the information around a range of community forums that we're delivering in Victoria. We're actually starting those on the 27th of October out of Wangaratta. We've got Wodonga on the 28th and Chuka on the 29th. So they're the first...
Wow. So what does that involve, Mark? I'm really interested in that. It's is that obviously representatives going out and speaking to all the sports clubs?
Yeah, it is. It's taking, with the core program, most of the work that we do is at an individual club level. So it might be meeting with the committee or some of the key leaders within the clubs, which could be coaches or committee members. With these particular forums, we're opening that up more broadly for a region. So we're trying to get a number of different sporting clubs in the room together. We're aiming to have about 100 people to each of these forums, which will be fantastic. And during that 2.5 hour block, there'll be in the evenings, clubs will hear some of the facts and also some of the myths around ice and illicit drugs in sport. So hearing from some of the experts in the sector. But the second half of the session will really be looking at what strategies clubs can implement to try and create, again, illicit drugs policy. So we know anecdotally clubs are coming to us saying they're aware of the issue, but they're unsure of how to actually work with their members and create those environments. So we'll actually give them some tools. There's a number of different activities that clubs can be involved with outside the actual forums themselves. So we see this as a really good starting point for clubs to come along and really build their capacity to be able to work through issues with illicit drugs at community level.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's an absolutely fantastic resource. So you've got the dates and all of that published on the website, as you said, that people can go and find those dates there?
Yes, absolutely. All that information is on the website. We have a number of forums already scheduled, so people in Clubland can actually jump on the website and register online, which is fantastic. And there'll also be some dates offered in early 2015. So at the moment, we're looking at late October through to early December. And then the second round of forums will be happening in the new year, which is really exciting. And we've got a real good mix of regional and also metropolitan forums happening.
So that's at goodsports.com.au for anyone out there who's not sure where the website is, goodsports.com.au. Do you also conduct other forums? I mean, with your programs, such as your accreditation programs, your mental health programs and your food programs, is there forums around that as well, or is it basically mainly on articles and information on the website?
Yeah, there are a number of different ways that we engage with the sporting sector. So quite often, and again, it's different in each jurisdiction, but in Victoria, we provide some forums around liquor licensing, so helping clubs understand their liquor licensing requirements. So we work very closely with the relevant authorities around providing information and resources to clubs. Another key component of Good Sports is providing heavily discounted responsible service of alcohol training for clubs, and it's just immensely popular, and we provide courses that are outside standard business hours, and we can quite often deliver those in the club rooms if there's enough members, and we'll promote to local clubs in a given area. So responsible service of alcohol training is one of our key activities. We work very closely with state sporting associations, with local government, and other leagues around Victoria. So we do have limited capacity to be able to respond to requests for forums, but the core piece of our work is working at an individual club level as clubs move through our accreditation program.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, just the fact that you go out there and you help clubs go through that responsible serving of alcohol accreditation is really good to know. So anyone in clubland out there that's looking to train up their staff or their volunteers, will jump on the website because you might
Certainly under the Victorian events section on our website, there'll be information around RSA courses, and we deliver over 150 RSA courses, which is quite a huge amount just in Victoria alone. So it's a big part of our operation, and we think it's an absolutely fantastic resource for club members to understand the legal requirements, but also to be able to talk through with other clubs and with their own members around how they're going to ensure that alcohol is managed responsibly on game days and special events, and also if they're looking to hire their club rooms out for events such as 18th birthdays or weddings or other special events, just to ensure that the focus is on sport and the focus is on creating healthy environments for their members.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, when you go through this accreditation, you become known as a good sports club. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And what we do is provide clubs with merchandise at each level of the program. So once the club achieves level one accreditation, we supply them with a good sports bar mat assigned to go in their club. And we also give them a certificate which can sit in their club rooms just to let their members and guests of the club understand they're a good sports club. And then at level two, we give them another sign. And by level three, we update that to say that the club's a level three club. So clubs certainly appreciate that merchandise, and it recognises their involvement with the club so they can help communicate with members. We're also looking at a whole range of activities where clubs can promote the good sports message through their Facebook page, on their website. Perhaps it's the president giving a quick talk at the club end of season dinner or the season launch. So we're really trying to activate the good sports participation within the club environment. So it's not just a message for the committee, it's a message for players, for coaches, for spectators, and anyone who's a guest of that club. They'll know that when they're stepping into a good sports club, it's an environment that's really demonstrating leadership in that local community.
I think that's just absolutely fantastic. How many clubs in Vic and Tassie are involved, and how many are good sports clubs? How many are going through the accreditation process as we speak? Do you have any numbers on that?
Yeah, we do. The numbers are quite huge. In Victoria, we have over 2,200 clubs involved in the program.
Wow.
Which is amazing, and a very high percentage of those clubs have moved through to level three of the program, which is the top level. In Tasmania, we're just under 300, and the program's been active for about 5 years in Tasmania. So again, we're seeing really good reach around the country, and again, over 6,000 clubs around the country shows there's a very strong demand for the program. We're still growing at a rate of around 1,000 clubs a year. So there's, clubs understand that participating in the program provides their committee with tools and resources around managing alcohol, but it also positions them very strongly for trying to attract new members. And if a parent's looking at two clubs, and they're aware of what the benefits are with being a good sports club, I'm sure that's where they'll be sending their children.
I think that's one of the really, really strong benefits of going through the accreditation is that ability to attract a new audience just through the trust that the brand, on the club website imparts. So, for people out there that are wondering how they could potentially, or clubs out there wondering how they could potentially take advantage of emerging marketplaces in terms of their membership, well, maybe this is a good way to go, because that's a one way of getting trust in your community. I just want to spend, if I may, Mark, just a couple of minutes just going through the accreditation level summaries, and feel free to add or subtract wherever you like. But for the edification of our listeners out there who are still not quite sure about what good sports actually offers clubs, it's as Mark said, it's an accreditation process which is three levels, and level one is about liquor licensing, bar management strategies, the responsible service of alcohol, training and creating a smoke-free environment. Level two is maintaining the level one standards, enhancing the bar management, RSA training, food and drink options, low and non-alcoholic. safe transport policy and diverse revenue generation. And level three is maintain level one and two standards and an alcohol management policy. So when you're talking about diverse revenue generation there, can you just clarify that one for me?
Yeah, it's a really good point, and that can often be the question that clubs ask right at the start of the program when they're talking about their bar, and you know, potentially from a club perspective, there may be some concern that when they're involved with good sports, is going to impact on the viability of the club. And what's really pleasing is that we know that as clubs progress through from level one to level three, there's no negative impact on the viability and sustainability of the club. So when we're looking at diversifying the revenue, we work with clubs around just a mini survey at level one and three, where we look at alcohol sales, we look at memberships, we look at how they generate money from sponsorships and any other activities. And potentially, or traditionally, I probably should say, clubs had a really high percentage of their overall income based around alcohol sales. So we look at trying to shift the focus away from alcohol. So if we're talking about a raffle, trying to move away from having alcohol-only raffle prizes. And again, if we're talking about giving a raffle book to a under 14 or under 16 player within the club, and you know, the first three prizes are all alcohol, there's a really mixed message that we're sending to our young people within sporting clubs. So that's one example where we try and shift the focus away in raffles and awards and prizes, but also shifting the club's focus away from all-you-can-drink functions, from happy hours, and those options within clubs where alcohol is discounted, and the research tells us that generally consumption is going to increase. So it might be providing a members hour for their club where there's a discount on sausages on the barbecue, or maybe there's a discount on some food over the canteen. So clubs can really provide a benefit to their members without having to discount the price of alcohol. So a lot of clubs in our program really grasp that. And while we're working through the accreditation program, we're really looking at the overall governance and leadership within the club. And clubs, as they progress through, are able to take the focus away from alcohol and really have the focus on sport. And it's quite surprising how much initiative there is in clubs when they sit back and look at how they can generate funding within their sporting club environment.
I just think that's an unbelievably powerful, you know, set of objectives for your organisation. It's working in grassroots sport. I see a lot of clubs and organisations that are reliant on alcohol and have been for a long time, and don't see any other way of keeping the doors open. And yet, you know, here you are, and you're advocating ways that you can do just that without being reliant on alcohol. I think it's fantastic. So
it really is. Yeah, and it's fantastic when we see clubs that are able to leverage their participation in good sports. They're able to go to local sponsors or potentially to local governments with small grants programs or other funding opportunities, and really promote what they're doing through good sports and health promotion in their club. And what we're finding is they are able to position themselves as more attractive for sponsors and more attractive for grants programs, because they're really having a focus on membership and again, families and females and young people being in an environment where they don't need to walk through the wet area to get to the canteen. And just these little things that perhaps clubs hadn't considered before, and through the support of a good sports project officer, they're able to really work strategically with how they can create that environment. And it's very pleasing to see clubs that do get that, and just the benefits they're able to receive in their club.
Absolutely. And when do you advise clubs to get good sports involved? Would that be at the start of the season when the committee first meets, or you know, what's the best strategy to get you guys involved with club and their planning and strategic goal setting?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question, and generally we try and work on the sporting season calendar. So at this point in time, we're sort of moving into our summer sports. So really a big focus on cricket and tennis and our other summer sports, which generally operate from September through to March, April. Then early in the new year, we start to work with predominantly our football codes as they move into the winter sporting season. So ideally, it's great for a club to start the good sports journey and program at the start of the season when the committee's on board. We certainly understand there are a lot of competing priorities for clubs around ensuring they have enough uniforms, ensuring everyone's registered. So we try and make their participation in good sports something that's not a huge time burden on the club. So we're flexible that we don't always have to meet with the full committee. We can catch up with a number of committee members and possibly some other leaders within the club at a time that really suits them. We can even do the accreditation process over the phone if that suits the club. So ideally, clubs will work at the beginning of the season and then be able to implement the strategies as they progress. But in saying that, if a football club's keen to work with us over the summer, which is essentially out of season, we'll work with them and ensure that they're set up and ready to go for the following season.
Yeah, that's great. I'm not sure whether you have any feedback. It doesn't have to be word for word, but even anecdotal, of some of the real changes and that you've seen the program affect at clubs.
Yeah, there's a number of different stories. I mean, it's fantastic. Part of the work that we do is working with local media releases for clubs who have had those great stories. We also have the Good Sports Awards, which we're having a standalone event in November at the MCG, which is an amazing event on our calendar this year, where we recognise the fantastic work that clubs have done around the country. But when we're looking at clubs, there's some really good case studies of clubs that have been in a real position where they've been unattractive for players. They've had families leaving, really because alcohol was managed very unresponsibly within the club, and it wasn't an environment that parents would like their children and their family to be involved in. And we've seen clubs that have been in that situation where they're really on the brink of not having a future. And they've had some committee members come on with a vision for creating an environment that is healthy and safe. They've joined Good Sports, and we've got many, many stories where clubs have been able to turn that situation around, where they're now bursting at the seams with members. They're attractive for sponsors. They've received grants funding, and they're doing facility development. And a number of these clubs can really attribute that to their participation in Good Sports, because what it does, it gives the committee some backing and some endorsement to go to their club and say, well, we're participating in Good Sports, so that means that we're committed to this set of standards, and we're going to work through that over a period of time. And we really give them the tools and resources to be able to implement that change within their club. On a national level, there's a number of those stories, and we'll certainly be celebrating the absolute top of those stories with our Good Sports Awards in November.
Are you going to get a chance to go on the hallowed turf, mate?
Oh, look, it'd be nice to get out there. I was in a couple of weeks ago when they were doing the surface. They were digging up and remodelling. So, look, it's an absolute icon in Australian sport, and fantastic for Good Sports to be able to have our first major award at that venue.
Yeah, I think that's superb. And just touching on that point that you made there, which I know there's a lot of clubs out there that struggle with the grants process and struggle with how they are going to identify themselves as doing things well and being able to attract organisations like businesses that might want to sponsor them. And as you said, Good Sports is a way of doing that. You know, it's a really great way for clubs to improve their brand, and that's what we're talking about. So, you know, well worthwhile. You've been a fantastic spokesperson for your organisation, a great ambassador for Good Sports. I know you get paid for it, but you've done an exceptional job. And
it's a fantastic program, and I really enjoy what we do. And we've got a workforce around the country that's really passionate about the program, and it's very exciting in Victoria that we're able to roll out the Tackle the Issue forums, looking at ICE, and our goal would be that around the country, we'll reach a point where we can have information on illicit drugs that all clubs will have access to, which will be fantastic.
And I think the other one too is the mental health program that you guys are starting to kick off. I think that is an increasingly tough challenge for a lot of parents, getting their kids away from that anxiety depression cycle, and so I'm very interested in what you're doing in that area, and I'm sure everybody else out there that's listening is interested in everything that Good Sports is doing. So Mark, I just want to thank you for making the time to come on the show. What you've been able to tell us and explain to us about what Good Sports does has been fantastic. I really encourage and urge everyone involved in sports clubs out there to take a really good look at the Good Sports credit accreditation program, and I think it's more than worthwhile to put yourself through it and your club through it, and I'm sure that Mark and his organisation will be there to support you all if you do decide to take that step. And once again, mate, thanks for your time on Sports Community Radio.
No, it's been my absolute pleasure, and thanks for having me along.
No worries. Thanks, Mark.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs.
Okay, we've come to the end of the podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the content today, and hopefully it will be of use to you and your sports club and your volunteers. As we also need to mention that we're proud to be associated with RPPFM, in whose studios we record this podcast. Okay, so on behalf of me, Jonah Vella.
And me, Steve Pallas, thank you for making us part of your sports community.